Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, this podcast breaks between 50 and 70% of the commandments, depending on who you ask.
Today's episode of The Skating Atheist is brought to you by Fox's new holistic programming channel, Placebo FX, featuring an all-star lineup of pseudoscientific programming, including hits like Gray's Astrology, Chiropractor Who, and Sons of Anthropometry. Placebo FX, because TV execs stopped trying when they realized that people would watch American Idol. And now, The Skating Atheist.
In response, he was quoting the gospel. So people who are so insulted and offended by what he said evidently are offended by what he was quoting in the gospel. So, you know, that's another interesting aspect in all of this.
This is Dustin Williams of the Atheist Nomads podcast, and we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
It's December 26th.
And we can finally listen to some elevator music in public places again.
I'm Noah Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright.
And from City Waiting for Its Balls to Drop, New York, New York, this is The Skating Atheist.
In this week's episode, Belgium puts the youth back in euthanasia.
Optimus Prime will die for your sins.
And Hemet Meta rejoins us to spackle some cracks in the wall of separation.
But first, the diatribe. Last week I was doing a little insufficiently executed Jumas shopping at one of New York's fine Fifth Avenue retail establishments when I happened upon 5 white-haired little old ladies in matching smocks. And on these smocks they'd written, in glue and glitter, the words, Granny Peace Brigade. Unlike me, they weren't giving in to seasonally induced mindless consumerism. Quite the opposite, in fact. They were there to protest. And of all the evils that face our world, they'd chosen to invest their efforts of protestation on fucking video games. So I stood there and regarded them with anthropological curiosity, because clearly they'd put some time into this. They'd spent the money on the matching yellow smocks, and they didn't half-ass it on the glitter. They all made their own, but each one had the team name written in block letters of approximately the same height, so clearly they got together on this. You know, they met up for some crafts and maybe a little lunch or something, and then they headed out to show those evil retailers how they felt about those filthy computer what's-its with the blood and guts in them. So it's not that they weren't willing to put in time to research. They just didn't. Do violent video games correlate with violence? Well, there's mountains of good data out there, and much of it's available for free on the internet. The consensus, by the way, seems to be almost certainly no, and while there's some indication that violent people tend toward violent video games, there's no compelling evidence to suggest that violent video games lead towards violence. But these ladies didn't bother to check. They'd already invested time and passion and glitter on this shit. They weren't going to do some independent research that might have proved them wrong. Hell no! Obviously, research wasn't on the menu, or they might have picked a store that actually sold video games. Fucking idiots. They looked at video games, they saw violence, they looked at the news, they saw violence, so they put 2 and 2 together. And sure, they got 13, but the important thing is that they put 2 and 2 together and had an excuse to get together with the Bridge Club and make a trip down to Ben Franklin's. And when I see these misguided geriatric bloodites and their fruitless campaign to impact violence through good intentions and stupidity, I can't help but think back to 4 mandatory years in high school of English Lit with no classes on critical thinking, no prerequisites about psychology or epistemology or formal logic, and nothing against English Lit or anything, but so far in my adult life, the ability to spot bullshit has been far handier than even the best of quatrains. But thanks to the religious fundies, critical thinking isn't on the school menu. Because think of all the shit teachers get when they teach redneck kids about evolution. Now imagine if the kids were coming home asking where Noah got his Patagonian pumas, or how Moses wrote the parts about his own funeral, or why we should thank God for sacrificing himself to himself in the first place. You know, I'm not going to say that religion is the reason that people are stupid, but it certainly helps. It fosters a stupid, overly accommodating culture that says there are multiple ways to arrive at the truth, and the ones with evidence and data aren't any better than the ones without. We just have different ways of evaluating the truth, see? Yours uses the brain, but mine uses the heart. Or the pancreas, since that's just as logical a place to say thoughts come from as the heart. And my pancreas thoughts are just as good as your brain thoughts, because science can't tell us everything and nobody knows for sure. And meanwhile, if we could just set all that shit aside and agree on a consistent and logical way of evaluating claims, we could call it science, then we could figure out what matters and what doesn't and put our times towards something more productive than protesting fucking video games. But we'd rather not do that, you see, because we don't like being wrong, and damn it, we already made the smocks.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is reigning champion of the Incredulous podcast, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to throw down some of that award-winning incredulity?
Why the fuck are we even talking about this? This entire podcast should go without saying. If God existed, I wouldn't win at anything. Think about it.
Well done. Now, how about some of that award-eligible headline delivering?
In our lead story tonight, A&E suspended Duck Dynasty star Phil Robertson after the release of a GQ interview in which he made several unoriginal homophobic remarks, including a hackneyed comparison of gay sex to bestiality. We've all heard that one before. As a result, God-fearing Christian heterosexual sheepfuckers everywhere are up in arms. That's right. And that means Westboro Baptist Church is up in arms.
It's kind of redundant, yeah. Yeah, and it's a good sign that, you know, when the Westboro Baptist Church is coming out on your side, your TV career is over.
Absolutely. So the heir to the synthetic quacking fortune released a statement in which...
Why didn't it just say, I'm a 67-year-old Christian redneck from Louisiana that kills small animals for a living. Of course I hate queers, you fucking idiots. Actually, what did they expect?
Actually, it explained how he's super tolerant of gays, believe it or not.
Oh.
Yeah, quote, we just give them the good news about Jesus, whether they're homosexuals, drunks, terrorists... We let God sort them out later. End
terrorists.
Quote. He started laughing at the end of his own quote. So that's nice. You know, he doesn't put arbitrary labels on people like gay, alcoholic, suicide bomber. He's colorblind. Those idiots. See everybody
all the
equally.
Same thing.
And as for that good news he was talking about, by the way, those groups are all equally going to hell, fairly. So good news, gay drunks who've been dying to get into terrorism. Nothing holding you back now. Good news, lesbian Al-Qaeda soldiers, drink up, no consequences. And also good news, bi curious alcoholic suicide bombers. Might as well suck a dick while you got the chance. Get to it.
Like my grandma always used to say. And by the way, when we get them to take In God We Trust off the money, that's the line we should be shooting for. Might as well suck a dick while you have the chance. That'd be great.
Absolutely. Now, along with the WBC, several other professional bigoted assholes have voiced support for Robertson's traditionally acceptable hate speech, including the Family Research Council and Koran-burning pastor Terry Jones, some illustrious supporters. Yeah. They argue that A&E, not H-aiding fags, denies Robertson's First Amendment rights to exercise Christianity in a world where all corporations do, in fact, H-8 fags.
Or should, properly. Anyway. And from the Now Where Will We Crucify Voltron file tonight, a San Diego federal judge has decided that a 43-foot-tall concrete cross on public property could be interpreted as a government endorsement of Christianity.
Or at least a government persecution of Jews, Muslims, and
right.
Transformers, right?
Yeah, don't say that around Michael Bayer. I swear Optimus will be hanging from this thing in Part 7. Now, I think it's worth noting that this is only the latest in a long series of judges ruling that the Mount Soledad cross is unconstitutional. Legal wrangling over the status of the controversial eyesore has been ongoing since 1989, and it was already found to be unconstitutional once in the 90s and again in 2011 because it's a giant, gaudy cross sitting on top of a mountain on public property, and it doesn't take a seasoned fucking magistrate to see what's wrong with that, apparently.
I mean, I'd say the best way to get rid of the cross, though, would be burning it, right? I mean,
That's an easy way to get rid of a cross. Shouldn't be too hard to find some Christians to get on board with that. You'd make a statement at the same time.
Yeah, curiously enough, it wouldn't. Proponents of the cross have tried everything from making the surrounding space a memorial to selling the land to transferring it to federal jurisdiction to avoid complying with the Constitution. And despite the fact that some church a few hundred feet from the present location has offered to keep it on their property, proponents fight on because what's the point of having a 29-foot tall cross on a 14-foot base if it isn't also on the summit of a mountain?
And in Salvation Arms Race news, the war on Christmas rages on, as bell ringer Christina Vindiola was punched really hard in the arm while collecting donations outside an Arizona Walmart for the Salvation Army. Reports indicate she provoked the violence, you know, she brought it on herself. She started shouting anti-Christian epithets like, Happy Holidays all over the place. So, I mean, can't say it's not her fault, at
That's
least a little bit.
That's got to be the stupidest example of Christian dominionism that we have to deal with. I set aside the fact that before they started getting all uppity about it, most people thought of Happy Holidays as a way of getting Merry Christmas and Happy New Year out in just five syllables. But even if it means what they think it means, they're getting pissed off at people for publicly acknowledging the fact that some people have a different religion than them.
Unfucking believable.
How dare some?
So an unnamed Merry Christmas fundamentalist heard Vindiola use slurs like the H-words several times, as well as other inflammatory synonymous phrases like blank December 25th. The Christian shopper obviously became incensed and shouted back something like, Don't you believe in God? It's Merry Christmas, you godless cunt! And then assaulted Vindiola for being a terrible Christian.
And in equal opportunity genital joke news tonight, the Russian punk band Pussy Riot was released from a Russian prison last week when it was deemed that the national threat that their metronomic cadence and scaled-down bar chords represented was sufficiently expired.
And the feminist movement takes another blow, which they hate. The most famous all-female band in history still has Pussy in their name. Pussy Riot indeed surpassed the illustrious Pussycat Dolls on their climb to the top of the tiny area below the glass floor in music.
Right.
So, congrats on that.
And the members of the all-girl band were originally imprisoned after recording a music video that criticized the Russian church's support of Putin, and in a theoretically abnormal abuse of anti-blasphemy laws, Putin incarcerated the group after painstakingly revealing the details of his evil plot to rule the world. And I suppose that since we're this deep into a pussy story, it's inevitable that we're going to put 30 seconds on the clock.
Well, I don't know. I can go for like twice that long, I think. I mean, if we go slow.
All right, we'll go for my personal record. 63 seconds on the clock. Names for vaginal tribute bands. Go.
Perfect. All right. Bled Zeppelin, because the vaginas bleed yes, regularly. I do.
Johnny Gash and the Tennessee Twat.
Coos Traveler.
Cleft Leopard.
Cleft asshole joke in there too. Blue Oyster Cunt.
Queef Latifah.
Well done, lesbian bonus points. Molly Hatchet Wound. Molly's Hatchet Wound.
I like it. I like lesbian bonus points too. And for the ladies who like it in the jazz, how about Cunt Basie and the Kansas Titty Five?
Wow, old school throwback. Nice. What about Fish Tacos? PH Fish Tacos.
It's works better written down.
It does.
Queen Crimson? No, wait, I'm sorry. That's more of a gay joke than a pussy joke. Never mind.
Grandmaster Gash.
How about Labiohead? Labiahead?
Stretching it.
Yeah.
Meatloaf Wallet.
Oh, nice. Fleetwood Crack.
What about Pink Void featuring Roger Twatters?
Oh, wait, I've got one. Hoo-Ha and the Blowfish.
Hold on. Snatchbox 20? That's double.
You know, to tell the truth, I have a few more, but I think that's quite enough feminism for the time being.
I just got to say, it's pretty amazing that in the, like, 17 vagina puns we just made, we never used clit. That's weird, right?
You know, it's funny. I looked for one, but I couldn't find it.
The elusive magic bean. And, just a quick few items before we close the headlines. Item one, 61 years after UK courts convicted math and computer genius Alan Turing of being too gay while cracking Nazi cryptography for them, and 59 years after his related suicide death, the living queen pardoned the dead queen and apologized that he was offered chemical castration via female hormone sex change injections in lieu of jail. That was offered to him as another option.
And they've already pardoned him for that, huh?
Yeah.
Item two is a quick update on the would-be satanic monument on the Oklahoma State House steps that we talked about a couple of episodes ago. After receiving additional requests from Hindus and animal rights activists, the state has declared a moratorium on new monuments that will, of course, not affect the Ten Commandments monument that got this ball of shit rolling in the first place.
And finally, item three. The human veal supply will spike after euthanasia was approved for youth in Belgium. That's right. And it's about fucking time. I mean, when you eat Chinese children, you just want to adopt another kid like 30 minutes later. It's exhausting.
And quick, before it gets any worse, we're going to close out the headlines. Heath, thanks as always.
Merry fucking Christmas, bitches.
We're a day late on that, but when we come back, I'll be rejoined by friendly atheist Hemant Mehta to talk about what students can do to keep God out of their high schools. Joining us this week is renowned atheist, activist, author, blogger, and all-around nice guy, Hemant Mehta. Hemant, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
Even though you haven't really gone anywhere. now, you publish at the Friendly Atheist blog, and it seems like every time I've ever heard you interviewed, the host will invariably at some point ask, why the Friendly Atheist? But I'm not going to ask you that, because I already know.
All right, good.
When I started the show, I sent emails to every atheist, author, podcaster, and blogger I could think of asking for this weird, idiosyncratic Farnsworth sound clip for the beginning of my show. Now, a few people got back to me within a few days asking for more information or saying, you know, ask me again later. You got back to me within hours. You sent the sound clip with a note attached that says, if this doesn't work, let me know. I'll try something else. So in my mind, you have definitely earned the title The Friendly Atheist.
Oh, thank you.
And to all of our listeners, you've also earned the title of inaugural Farnsworth quoter. So if you ever want to put that on your resume, I'm happy to act as a reference.
Done and done.
All right. So last week we were discussing how and why students should declare their atheism to their family and friends. Tonight I want to talk a little bit more about what you can do once you're wearing that scarlet letter. Now, in your book, The Young Atheist Survival Guide, you talked about a number of real-world cases of teenage atheist activists making a difference in their communities. So let's say I'm a secular student and I'm gung-ho to patrol the moats of the separation of church and state. What should I be on the lookout for in my school?
At your school, what you want to make sure is, look, if this is a public school anyway, you just want to make sure that religious groups or local community churches also aren't getting any special privileges that other groups are not. That means you can't have like a fellowship of Christian athletes if other religious groups are not allowed to form. That doesn't happen very often. What does happen a lot is a couple things. You will have teachers who might pray or preach in the classroom. You may have administrators who pray or preach over the loudspeaker or at assemblies or something like that. They will force you sometimes to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, which they can't do. One thing that happens, I've seen it happen a lot lately, is they will bring in speakers to the school for assemblies or classroom presentations who are sponsored by the local church or a local Christian nonprofit organization. So a lot of health classes may have someone come in to talk about, say, abstinence-only sex education, which in and of itself, I mean, that's a whole nother topic right there. But they'll have someone come in to talk about sex education, but they're coming from like a Christian organization. And so they're spreading things that are not just factually untrue, but they're doing it because the Bible says you have to do this. Or, you know, you can't have sex before you're married because this is what the Bible says. And it's like that sort of thinking doesn't belong in that classroom. We can debate the merits of whether or not, you know, sex before marriage is okay or what things high school kids should and shouldn't be doing. But you can't do it from a biblical perspective. And there's no reason church groups should be sending speakers there. There's no reason administrators should be allowing them in there. And the weird thing is it happens so often. And in a couple recent cases, the only reason, you know, it was stopped is because some smart and, you know, some intelligent students took video of those assemblies. So we get it on camera that they're preaching about Jesus. They document, like, I had a health class. This is the flyer I got. And this is the sort of thing that this person taught in the classroom. Look at the handout they gave me. and they send it to those organizations that can do something about it, or they send it to bloggers, or they send it somewhere. They record it with their phones or something. And again, there are laws. Sometimes you can't always record stuff, but so far, when you've seen it happen, like, that's a huge slam dunk to be able to say, my teacher was preaching in the classroom, and by the way, I have the recording to prove it.
Right.
You said, and by the way, I should mention, one of the things I love about high school atheists especially is if this were an adult group and something was going on in, the city council or the local government, we would say talk to a group like the Freedom From Religion Foundation or the ACLU that can send a complaint letter and possibly file a lawsuit. When it happens in high school, it's kind of easier to tell them, go tell your local newspaper.
Right.
Go send a message to your local media, because you don't have to deal with the hassle of a lawsuit. You can remain anonymous. You can just send them the information and say, you know, you go do the reporting. That's your job, you know? But usually when the press comes calling and says, hey, we heard you won't let this atheist group get off the ground, what's up with that? They cave pretty quickly.
Yeah, if there's one thing that I got from your book, especially in terms of combating these church-state separation issues, it was document, document, document. So definitely
yes.
Great advice.
You know what? One thing that we have told that I've preached in the book, that's the wrong word to use. One thing I said in the book, and we did this in my school too, they were putting up flyers to advertise their atheist group. And, you know, I told them, take pictures when you put up those flyers. Take pictures everywhere you put them up. And you know they're going to get vandalized. You know they're going to get defaced. It happens every single school those posters go up in. And there's a couple reasons for doing it. One is so you could show the administration, look, we put up these posters. We got them approved by you guys. They should be allowed. And yet they're getting ripped down or defaced by students. The administration needs to know about that. And two is, you know, when you put up those signs and someone writes on there, you know, love Jesus or something like that, all of a sudden you have something to hold against those groups that are doing that or those kids that are doing that, which is to say, look, all we want to do is have a meeting and we're not being offensive. We're not being derogatory toward other groups. I don't get how this is allowed. And by the way, those posters, you can then have posters that might say, you know, don't rip this. Jesus is watching. You put up posters that say this is actual vandalism that occurred at our schools by, you know, representatives of a Christian group or something like that. I mean, those pictures, they're such a teachable moment for people who don't realize that it happens everywhere. And so just taking a picture and like putting it up online somewhere or sending it to me, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I mean, those posts are read by so many people who are just incensed by the fact that anyone would do that and the school would let it happen. So again, document, like you said, just take a picture of what you're doing. If you get a nasty email from a student, print it out. If you get a nasty tweet from somebody at school, take a screenshot and send it to your administrators. It's not okay for that to happen.
All right. Now you talked a lot about atheist clubs, and I'm dying of curiosity here. We didn't have anything like that in South Georgia. What does one do at an atheist club in high school?
So a couple things. You know, the first – we started one this year. Students came up to me, said they wanted to start it. And the first couple times we met, the students – and I try to stay out of the way as much as I can anyway. My job is a moderator, facilitator, and nothing else. The students just kind of talked about their own religious upbringing and the religion that's all around them because we live in a conservative area. But in subsequent ones, we tried to get atheist speakers to come talk to us via Skype. So Matt Dillahunty, who does the Atheist Experience public access show and is on YouTube everywhere, he answered questions for our group members for like half an hour.
Oh, wow.
We had a debate with the representatives from the Christian group at our school. And hopefully in the near future, we'll do like just some video watching, movie watching, and hopefully we'll get to the point where we could do like volunteer work and do charity work for the community, because that's really what this is all about. We want to do good. We want to destroy the stereotypes.
Excellent. That sounds like a blast, actually. I kind of want to join your club now.
Yeah, right? It's really fun. I mean, as someone who's been involved in this stuff, it's such a cool experience watching it happen when I just get to watch and have fun. I don't get to run it, you know?
Right. No, it's got to be really fun, I'm sure, to watch it develop and kind of watch them make the mistakes and learn along with it. That's awesome.
Exactly.
You know, I have a few more questions here, but it looks like we're going to run out of time again. So before we did, I wanted to ask you about a project that you're involved in that I really admire. Can you give our listeners a quick synopsis of what the Foundation Beyond Belief is and what it does?
Yeah. So a few years ago, we kept reading these studies that said, you know, Christians, religious people give more to charity than atheists. And every time you read those articles, it's like, well, that's not really fair because Christians give more because they have a great way to give, which is through their church. And, you know, the argument that Dale McGowan, who founded the organization, had and that I share with him is that, you know, I think atheists are just as charitable as religious people, but we don't have a way to give other than giving ourselves to random organizations or texting a number to the Red Cross or something like that. So what if we gave atheists a way to donate money to groups that are not atheists, but they're just doing awesome things around the world? And we would encourage them to give as a group of atheists, because maybe that group mentality will urge them to give even more. And that has worked really, really well so far. So every 3 months, every quarter, we select 5 charities that are doing really amazing things. We vet them. We make sure the money is going to good charities doing good work and it's being used efficiently. And we just promote the heck out of them. And we say, you know, if you like these groups, donate however you want to give. If you want to give 20% per group, great. If you want to give like 20, 20, and nothing to one charity, that's totally fine too. You have that option. And it's been about 3 years now, and we've raised over $1 million just for those charities alone. That's not to mention any volunteers. We've started having volunteers on the ground doing work. And we've also started doing relief charities. So like in the case of a natural disaster, like the typhoon that just happened in the Philippines, we can do quick relief charity work and say, look, donate money now. We are going to find a good local organization to give this money to. And I think for the typhoon one in particular, we raised like $60,000 or more in the span of just like a week or so.
Wow.
And again, these are atheists giving money to good secular groups. And it's just nice to see atheists giving as a group. And so we can just tell people, look, we are just as charitable as anyone else. We just need a good way to give. And I'm so proud of what Dale has done with that group.
Yeah, obviously one of the big problems that atheists have giving to charities is that so many charities are secretly religious, or maybe a lot of the money's going to, you know, what you don't know where it's going.
Right.
So it's great to know that there's somebody out there doing the yeoman's work there. I really, really admire the group. And if somebody wants to get involved with them, they would go to
foundationbeyondbelief.org is the website. And it's, seriously, I would be saying this even if I wasn't on the board, but it's just an awesome group.
Well, I'm not on the board, and I second that, so I can back you up. All right, well, that's going to run a smack out of time, but before I let you go, I want to thank you for providing such a stellar example of friendly atheism to counter the stereotype that all atheists are like me. And for the listeners, remember, the book is titled The Young Atheist Survival Guide, Helping Secular Students Thrive. It's a must-read for students, but even a middle-aged guy like myself learned a lot reading it.
Thank you.
You can also find Hemet at the Friendly Atheist blog, which you'll find at patheos.com, and odds are really good that he's also coming to a conference near you soon. Emmett, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Snow. I appreciate it.
Before we apologize awkwardly and claim it's never happened to us before tonight, I wanted to direct you to a hilarious episode of the Incredulous podcast featuring Jay Novella of The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, our very own Heath Enright, and our very own me. You can Google Incredulous with a K, or you can look for a handy link on the show notes for this episode. Huge thanks to Andy for the invite. It was a ton of fun. I also need to thank Lucinda for opening the show for us. I need to thank Heath for his humorous lack of moral compass. I need to thank Hemant Mehta once again for a really productive and interesting conversation. And I want to remind you that you can find links to his website and the Foundation Beyond Belief on our homepage and on the show notes for this episode. Of course, I've also got to thank Dustin from the Atheist Nomads podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. His partner did one before, but Dustin made more of the rock star entrance. If you haven't checked out their podcast yet, you have nobody to blame for that but yourself. Again, links can be found on the show notes. I also need to begrudgingly thank Cecil from Cognitive Dissonance for grinching all the joy out of Christmas for me this year by defeating me by less than 4 points last week in the Fantasy Football League of Sinister Secularists, thus earning the first ever championship title. title in said league. But of course, most of all, we need to thank this week's most exceptional vertebrates, Steve-O, Chester, David, Ryan, James, and Magnus the Great Dane. Steve-O, who's so cool they measure him in Kelvin, Chester, who's fortified with 13 essential vitamins and minerals, David, whose athletic prowess is so great that he holds records in sports he's never played, Ryan, who is second only to the Hokey Pokey and being what it's all about, James, who shall one day inherit a kingdom and make a killing with that shit on eBay, and Magnus the Great Dane, who is, by default, more correct on the God question than more than three-quarters of the world's human population, because even a species that eats its own poop knows better than to believe in God. These six noble and notable humanitarians and caninitarians have justified the proterozoic leap into multicellular life this week by giving us money. Not everybody has the compassion, composure, and competence to compensate us, but if you think you share Steve O, Chester, David, Ryan, James, and Magnus the Great Dane's complimentable competence, you'll find the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you got duped by that old better to give than to receive line again this year and blew all your cash, no worries, you can help us a ton for free by leaving us a review on iTunes and checking us out on all those various social media sites that you frequent. Oh, and check us out on Stitcher, because I forgot to mention that the last couple of weeks and our Stitcher rank dropped accordingly, so definitely do that. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.